Trump's disdain for facts and truth, his penchant for magical thinking, along with his embrace of conspiracy theories, mesh seamlessly with the worldview of the Christian right. Trump, like the Christian right, sees himself as under attack from the media, academia, the liberal establishment, Hollywood, and the Democratic Party.
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges on Trump and the Christian right. Talk about an odd couple, the 45th president and the Christian right. For the president, renowned for his wayward ways, the support from some of the mega churches and their high priests form a key part of his base. According to a Pew poll, over 80% of white evangelicals said they will vote for the current occupant of the Oval Office. The Christian right looks the other way when confronted with the facts. For them, it's all about opposing same-sex marriage and abortion, funding religious-based schools, ensuring right-wing judges are appointed, and embracing nationalism, militarism, and imperialism. There's enough hypocrisy to fill many bookshelves. Just see Jerry Falwell Jr. Sometimes it's hard to keep the faith. Our guest today is Chris Hedges. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author. He spoke at Colgate University in Hamilton, New York, in late February 2020. And now, Chris Hedges.
The greatest moral failing of the liberal Christian church was its refusal, made in the name of tolerance and dialogue, to denounce the followers of the Christian right as heretics. By tolerating the intolerant, it ceded religious legitimacy to an array of con artists, charlatans, and demagogues, and their cultish supporters. It stood by as the core message of the Christian gospel, concern for the poor and the oppressed, was perverted into a magical world where God and Jesus showered believers with material wealth and power. The white race, especially in the United States, became God's chosen agent. Imperialism and war became divine instruments for purging the world of infidels and barbarians, evil itself. Capitalism, because God blessed the righteous with wealth and power and condemned the immoral to poverty and suffering, became shorn of its inherent cruelty and exploitation. Rational and scientific inquiry, because it conflicts with the movement's mythology and warped religious ideology and conspiracy theories, is attacked and rejected. The condemnations of Muslims as satanic, of Christians who do not subscribe to the prosperity gospel as nominal Christians, of non-believers as damned, of those in our criminal caste, mostly poor people of color, as morally depraved and deserving of harsh sentences, including the death penalty, and the branding of the GBLT community as sick, deny whole peoples their dignity and their legitimate right to be. I spent 2 years researching the Christian right. I traveled across the country, spending time in mega churches, creationist seminars, right to life retreats, and even took a course taught by D. James Kennedy in Florida called Evangelism Explosion. I conducted a few hundred interviews, and I met many evangelicals of goodwill and good intentions. But I came away believing that the leadership of the Christian right cruelly manipulates the despair of its followers and poses a danger to our open society. Dr. James Luther Adams, my ethics professor at Harvard Divinity School, told us that when we were his age, he was then close to 80, we would all be fighting the Christian fascists. The warning, given to me more than 3 decades ago, came in a moment Pat Robertson, another radio and tele-evangelist, began speaking about a new political religion that would direct its efforts at taking control of all institutions, including mainstream denominations, and finally the government. Its stated goal was to use the United States to create a global Christian empire. It was hard at the time to take such fantastic rhetoric seriously, especially given the buffoonish quality of those who expounded it. But Adams warned us against the blindness caused by intellectual snobbery. The fascists, he said, were not going to return with swastikas and brown shirts. Their ideological heirs would wrap fascism in the Christian cross and the American flag and hold mass recitations of the Pledge of Allegiance. Adams was not a man to use the word fascist lightly. He was in Germany in 1935 and 1936 and worked with the underground anti-Nazi church known as the Confessing Church, led by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Adams was eventually detained, interrogated by the Gestapo, and expelled from Germany. He left on a night train with framed portraits of Adolf Hitler placed over the contents inside his suitcase to hide the rolls of home movie film he took of the so-called German Christian Church, which was pro-Nazi, and the few individuals who defied them, including the theologians Karl Barth and Albert Schweitzer. The ruse worked when the border police lifted the top of the suitcases, saw the portraits of the Führer, and closed them up again. I watched hours of the grainy black and white films as he narrated in his apartment in Cambridge. Adams saw in the Christian right, long before we did, disturbing similarities with the German Christian Church, similarities that he said would, in the event of prolonged social instability accompanied by economic decline, see American fascists, under the guise of religion, rise to dismantle the open society. He despaired of liberals, who, he said, as in Nazi Germany, mouthed platitudes about dialogue and inclusiveness that made them ineffectual and impotent. Liberals, he said, did not understand the power and allure of evil, nor the cold reality of how the world worked. Like Bonhoeffer, he did not believe that those who would fight effectively in coming times of turmoil, a fight that for him was a fundamental part of the biblical call, would come from the church or the liberal secular elite. Adams told us to watch closely what the Christian right did to ethnic and religious minorities, as well as those who did not adhere to rigid sexual stereotypes. He watched the Nazis use moral, quote unquote, values to launch state repression of opponents. Hitler, days after he took power in 1933, imposed a ban on all homosexual and lesbian organizations. He ordered raids on places where homosexuals gathered, culminating with the ransacking of the Institute for Sexual Science in Berlin. Thousands of volumes from the Institute's library were tossed into a bonfire. The assault was cheered by the German churches. Adams said that the GBLTQ community, Muslims, immigrants, and poor people of color would be the first deviants singled out by the Christian right, but we would be the next. I remember thinking his warning was perhaps too apocalyptic. But nearly 4 decades later, the power brokers and the Christian right have moved from the fringes of society to the floor of the House of Representatives and the Senate, the White House, the judiciary, and major government departments. FRC Action, the legislative affiliate of the Family Research Council, gave 245 members of Congress a perfect 100% for votes that support the agenda of the Christian right. The Family Research Council, which called on its followers to pray for God to vanquish the demonic, that's their quotes, forces behind Trump's impeachment, is identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group because of its campaigns to discriminate against the LGBTQ community. Trump has elevated members of the Christian right to prominent positions of power, including Mike Pence to the vice presidency, Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State, Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education, Ben Carson as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, William Barr as Attorney General, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, and the tele-evangelist Paula White, who promises her donors their own personal angel, to his Faith and Opportunities Initiative. Frank Amadea, the Trump campaign's liaison for Christian policy, claims to have raised an ant from the dead. And the Christian right, which makes up as much as a quarter of the country, or close to 80 million people, has its own version of the brown shirts, the four higher mercenary armies and private contractors amassed by people such as Eric Prince, the brother of Betsy DeVos. Reason, science, facts, and verifiable truth are useless weapons against this belief system. I think the Christian right is best understood as what anthropologists will call a crisis cult. Crisis cults arise in most collapsing societies. They promise through magic to recover the lost grandeur of a mythologized past. This magical thinking banishes doubt, anxiety, and feelings of disempowerment. Traditional social hierarchies and rules, including white male supremacy, will be restored. Those blamed for our decline, intellectuals, artists, liberals, immigrants, undocumented workers, poor people of color, feminists, will be disempowered. America, freed from the contamination of these quote-unquote degenerate forces, will be restored. The Christian right propagates its magical thinking through a selective biblical literalism. They hold up as sacrosanct biblical passages that buttress their ideology and ignore or grossly misinterpret the ones that do not. They live in a binary universe. They see themselves as eternal victims, oppressed by dark and sinister groups seeking their annihilation. They alone know the will of God. They alone can fulfill God's will. They seek total cultural and political domination. The secular reality-based world, one where Satan, miracles, divine edicts, angels, and magics do not exist, destroyed their lives and their communities. This secular world took away their jobs and their futures. It destroyed the social bonds that gave them purpose, dignity, and hope. In their despair, they often succumbed to alcoholism, drug, gambling, and pornography addictions. They endured familial breakdowns, divorce, jail, evictions, unemployment, and domestic and sexual abuse. And then from the depths of suicidal despair, they suddenly discovered that God has a plan for them. God will save them. God will intervene in their lives to promote and protect them. God has called them to carry out his holy mission in the world and to be rich, powerful, and happy. The only thing that saved them was their conversion, the realization that God had a plan for them and would protect them. These believers were pushed by the wreckage caused by neoliberalism into the arms of charlatans. All who attempt to reach them through the rational language of fact and evidence are hated and ultimately feared, for they seek to force believers back into what they call the culture of death that nearly destroyed them. Trump has handed veto and appointment power over key positions in government, especially in the federal courts, to the Christian right. He has installed 133 district court judges out of 677 total, 50 appeals court judges out of 179 total, and 2 U.S. Supreme Court justices out of 9. Almost all of these justices were vetted by the Federalist Society and the Christian Right. Many have been rated as unqualified by the American Bar Association, the country's largest nonpartisan coalition of lawyers. Trump has moved to ban Muslim immigrants. He has rolled back civil rights legislation. He has made war on reproductive rights by restricting abortion and defunding Planned Parenthood. Trump was the first president to address the radical anti-choice March for Life event in person. He permits discrimination against LGBTQ community people in the name of quote-unquote religious liberty. He has ripped down the firewall between church and state by revoking the Johnson Amendment, which prohibits churches which are tax-exempt from endorsing political candidates. His appointees routinely use biblical strictures to justify an array of policy decisions, including environmental deregulation, tax cuts, and the replacement of public schools with charter schools, an action that permits the transfer of federal education funds to private, quote-unquote, Christian schools. The iconography and language and symbols of American nationalism are intertwined with the iconography, language, and symbols of the Christian faith. Mega pastors who often share Trump's narcissism rule despotic, cult-like fiefdoms. They make millions of dollars by using this heretical belief system to prey on the despair and desperation of their congregations. They distort the Bible to champion unfettered capitalism, the cult of masculinity, the belief that violence can purge the world of evil, white supremacy, bigotry, American chauvinism, religious intolerance, anger, racism, and conspiracy theories. Those within the evangelical movement, such as the editors of the magazine Christianity Today, who have attempted to state the obvious about Trump, that he is corrupt, inept, and immoral, and should be removed from office, are brutally attacked. Nearly 200 evangelical leaders, including former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, former Representative Michelle Bachmann, Jerry Falwell Jr., and Ralph Reed, signed a joint letter denouncing the Christian Today editorial. Evangelical Christians who criticize Trump are as swiftly disappeared as Republican politicians who criticize Trump. Trump received 80% of the white evangelical vote in the 2016 presidential election, and in a poll during the House impeachment proceedings, 90% of evangelicals said they opposed the impeachment and ouster of the president. Among Republicans who identify as white evangelical Protestants, that number rises to 99%. Trump, of course, has no ideology, but his ideological vacuum is being swiftly filled by the Christian right. This Christianized fascism, with its network of megachurches, schools, universities, and law schools, and its vast radio and television empire, is a potent ally for the beleaguered president. The Christian right has been organizing and preparing to take power for decades. It is important to note that modern evangelicals, like modern fundamentalists, bear little resemblance to evangelicals and fundamentalists of a few decades ago. Traditional evangelicals and fundamentalists believe that they should distance and remove themselves from the contaminants of secular society, including politics. But a change took place in the early 1970s with the rise of what we call the Reconstructionist or Dominionist movement, articulated by Roussas Rushduni, the intellectual godfather of the modern Christian right. His 1,600-page, three-volume work, Institutes of Biblical Law, which makes for very turgid reading, argued that American society should be governed according to the biblical precepts in the Ten Commandments. He wrote that the elect, like Adam and Noah, were given dominion over the earth and must subdue the earth along with all non-believers so the Messiah could return. Reconstructionism or dominionism was a radically new interpretation within the evangelical movement. The Messiah, it was traditionally taught, would return in an event called the rapture, where there would be wars and chaos. The non-believers would be tormented and killed. The elect would be lifted to heaven. The rapture, which is not in the Bible, was not something that could be manipulated or influenced, although believers often interpreted catastrophes and wars as portents of the imminent second coming. Rushduni, however, promoted an ideology that advocated violence and the seizure of power to create the Christian state. His ideology was in many ways the mirror image of liberation theology, which came into vogue at about the same time. While the liberation theologians crammed the Bible into the box of Marxism, Rushduni crammed it into the equally distorting box of fascism. I saw this ideological clash as a reporter in the 1980s in Central America. In El Salvador, leftist priests endorsed and in a few cases traveled with the armed rebel movements in Nicaragua and El Salvador. At the same time, the Christian right, led by figures such as Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, along with conservative Latin American pastors and clerics, backed genocidal dictators such as Rios Montt in Guatemala or Augusto Pinochet in Chile. They supported the Contras fighting the Sandinistas in Nicaragua and the brutal military regime in Argentina, which disappeared 30,000 of its own citizens. The Institutes of Biblical Law calls for a society that is harsh, unforgiving, and violent. Offenses such as adultery, witchcraft, blasphemy, and homosexuality merit the death penalty. The death penalty will be expanded to include, quote-unquote, moral crimes, including apostasy, blasphemy, sodomy, and witchcraft, as well as abortion, which will be treated as murder. Women will be subordinate to men. Those who practice other faiths will become, at best, second-class citizens and eventually outcasts. The wars in the Middle East will be defined as religious crusades against Muslims. There will be no separation of church and state. The attack on quote-unquote failing government schools by Trump in his State of the Union address when calling for the expansion of school choice vouchers are words lifted verbatim from the Christian right and Rushduni. The only legitimate voices will be Christian. America will become an agent of God. Those who defy the Christian authorities will be branded as agents of Satan. The world is to be subdued and ruled by a Christian United States. Rushduni, a virulent anti-Semite, dismissed the number of 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust as an inflated figure. His theories on race echo Nazi eugenics. The white man has behind him centuries of Christian culture, and the discipline and selective breeding this faith requires, he wrote, the Negro is a product of a racially different past, and his heredity has been governed by radically different considerations. The background of Negro culture is African and magic, and the purposes of the magic are control and power over God, man, nature, and society. Voodoo or magic was the religion and life of American Negroes. Voodoo songs underlie jazz, and old voodoo with its power goal has been merely replaced with revolutionary voodoo, a modernized power drive. Rushduni was also deeply antagonistic to the federal government. He believed the federal government should concern itself with little more than national defense. Education and social welfare should be handed over to the churches. Biblical law must replace the secular code. The poor condemned for sloth, indolence, and sinfulness would be denied government assistance. Crimes requiring the death penalty would be expanded. Reconstructionism remains at the heart of this movement. It is being enacted through school vouchers with federal dollars going into Christian schools and the assault against federal agencies that deal with poverty, education, and human services. The Christian state would come about not, Rushdoony argued, through signs and wonders, but through the establishment of the Christian nation. Rushdoony's son-in-law, Gary North, a popular writer and founder of the Institute for Christian Economics, laid out the aims of the Christian right. So let's be blunt about it. We must use the doctrine of religious liberty to gain independence for Christian schools until we train up a generation of people who know that there is no religious neutrality, no neutral law, no neutral education, and no neutral civil government. Then they will get busy in constructing Bible-based social, political, and religious order, which finally denies the religious liberty of the enemies of God. The Christian right finds its ideological justification in a very narrow segment of the gospel, in particular, the letters of the Apostle Paul, especially the story of Paul's conversion on the road to Damascus in the book of Acts. It draws heavily from the book of Revelations and the Gospel of John, which is Gnostic. These books share an apocalyptic theology. The book of Revelations is the only time in the Gospels where Jesus sanctions violence, offering up a vision of Christ as the head of a great and murderous army of heavenly avengers. Martin Luther found the God portrayed in Revelation so distasteful, he put the book in the appendix of his German translation of the Bible. These books rarely speak about Christ's message of love, forgiveness, compassion, and concern for the poor and oppressed. They focus on the doom and destruction that will befall unbelievers and the urgent need for personal salvation. The world is divided between good and evil, between those who act as agents of God and those who act as agents of Satan. The Jesus of the other three Gospels, the Jesus who turned the other cheek and embraced his enemies, an idea that was radical and startling in the ancient Roman world, is purged in the narrative selected by the Christian right. The cult of masculinity is celebrated. Feminism and homosexuality are social forces, believers are told, that have rendered the American male physically and spiritually weak. Jesus is portrayed as a man of action, casting out demons, battling the Antichrist, attacking hypocrites, and castigating the corrupt. The cult of masculinity brings with it the glorification of strength, violence, and vengeance. It turns Christ into a Rambo-like figure. Indeed, depictions of Jesus within the movement often show a powerfully built man wielding a sword. The image of Christ as warrior is appealing to many within the movement. The loss of manufacturing jobs, lack of affordable health care, negligible opportunities for education, poor job security, has left tens of millions of Americans embittered and locked out. This ideology is attractive because it offers them the hope of power, protection, and revenge. It sanctifies their rage. It stokes the paranoia about the outside world maintained through bizarre conspiracy theories, many on display in Pat Robertson's book, The New World Order, and certainly on display in the Trump White House.
You're listening to Chris Hedges on Trump and the Christian Right. To place a credit card order for CDs of this program, call us at 1-800-444-1977. We're offering you, our listeners, written transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s free of charge. Just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. Our website is alternativeradio.org.
Deindustrialization and the betrayal of the working class by the ruling elites, including the Democratic Party, has been crucial to the success of the movement. And by the end of the 2 years I spent reporting for the book, I was convinced that only by reintegrating the working class into society through stable, well-paying jobs, access to good education, health care as a human right, only then could the Christian right be effectively blunted. These believers are correct in blaming the ruling elites for abandoning them and they are correct in condemning a callous and immoral culture. The problem is that their solution will snuff out our open society. The depictions of violence that will befall non-believers are detailed, gruesome, and brutal. It speaks to the rage many believers harbor and the thirst for revenge. This, in large part, accounts for the huge sales of the apocalyptic series by Tim LaHaye and Jerry B. Jenkins. In their novel, Glorious Appearing, based on LaHaye's interpretation of biblical prophecies about the second coming, Christ eviscerates the flesh of millions of non-believers with the mere sound of his voice. There are long descriptions of horror, how the very words of the Lord had superheated their blood, causing it to burst through their veins and skin, this is a quote from the book, eyes disintegrate, tongues melt, flesh dissolves. The novel part of the Left Behind series are the best-selling adult novels in the country, and they preach holy war. Natural disasters, terrorist attacks, instability in Israel, the fighting in Iraq, Syria, Libya, and Afghanistan are all signposts. The march towards global war, even nuclear war, is not to be feared, but welcomed as the harbinger of the second coming. And leading the avenging armies is an angry, violent Messiah who dooms millions of non-believers to a horrible and painful death. The movement seeks to discredit the rational disciplines that are the pillars of the Enlightenment, to abolish the liberal polity of the Enlightenment. This corruption of science and law, a central objective of the Trump administration, is vital in promoting the doctrine. Creationism, or intelligent design, like eugenics for the Nazis, must be introduced into the mainstream as a valid scientific discipline to destroy the discipline of science itself. This is why the Christian right is working to bring test cases to ensure that school textbooks include intelligent design and condemn gay marriage. This assault on science is especially deadly, given the climate emergency, which, if not addressed in a meaningful way very soon, will mean the extinction of the human species along with most other species. The inclusion of crackpot theories in scientific or legal debate is part of the effort to destroy dispassionate and honest intellectual inquiry. Facts that get in the way of the myth or the ideology are altered. Lies in this worldview become true. Hannah Arendt called this process nihilistic relativism, although a better phrase might be collective insanity. The Christian right has fought successfully to have creationist books sold in national park bookstores in the Grand Canyon, taught as a theory in public schools in states such as Alabama and Arkansas. Intelligent design is promoted in Christian textbooks. All animal species, or at least their progenitors, students read Fit on Noah's Ark. I went to the Creationist Museum in Peterborough, Kentucky. And the first replica of a scene that we were ushered into was the Garden of Eden with a waterfall and plastic figures of Adam and Eve naked, but Eve was turned so you couldn't see her breasts. And there was a T-Rex with a saddle on it because, as the guide explained, in the Garden of Eden, the animals, everybody lived together. And she said, well, I'm sure you all wonder why the T-Rex has such big teeth. It's because Adam and Eve used the T-Rex to open the coconuts. And then we went into the next room, which was a replica of Noah's Ark. And she said, I'm sure you all wonder how Noah got the dinosaurs on the Ark. Well, he only put baby dinosaurs on the Ark. And it's funny here, but when you're sitting with 40 or 50 people who believe it, it's totally terrifying. Tens of millions of Americans are now hermetically sealed within this bizarre worldview. They are fed a steady diet of conspiracy theories and lies on the internet, in their megachurches, in Christian schools and colleges, and on Christian television and radio. Elizabeth Dilling, who wrote The Red Network, a very popular book among the Christian right, she's a Nazi sympathizer, is required reading. Thomas Jefferson, who favored separation of church and state, is ignored. This Christian propaganda hails the quote-unquote significant contributions of the Confederacy. Senator Joe McCarthy, who led the anti-communist witch hunts in the 1950s, he's rehabilitated as an American hero. The Israel-Palestine conflict, along with the wars in the Middle East, are defined as part of the worldwide battle against satanic Islamic terror. Those who embrace this movement need to feel, even if they are not, that they are victims surrounded by dark and sinister forces bent on their destruction. They need to elevate themselves to the role of holy warriors, infused with a noble calling and purpose. They need to sanctify the rage and hyper-masculinity that are the core of fascism. The rigidity and simplicity of their belief, which includes being anointed for a special purpose in life by God, are potent weapons in the fight against their own demons and desire for meaning. What convinces masses are not facts, Hannah Arendt wrote, and not even invented facts, but only the consistency of the system which they are presumably part. Repetition, somewhat overrated in importance because of the common belief in the masses' inferior capacity to grasp and remember, is important because it convinces them of consistency in time. Trump's disdain for facts and truth, his penchant for magical thinking, along with his embrace of conspiracy theories, mesh seamlessly with the worldview of the Christian right. Trump, like the Christian right, sees himself as under attack from the media, academia, the liberal establishment, Hollywood, and the Democratic Party. In this worldview, global warming is a hoax. Barack Obama is a Muslim. Millions of people voted illegally in the 2016 election. Trump and his brain trust, including figures like Stephen Miller, are Manichaeans. They view the world in black and white, good and evil, them and us. On the surface, it appears incongruous that the Christian right would rally behind a narcissistic New York real estate developer who has been repeatedly charged with sexual assault, is a serial philanderer and adulterer, lies like he breathes, is consumed by greed, does not appear to read or even know the Bible, routinely defrauds and cheats his investors and contractors, expresses a grotesque misogyny and contempt for women, and yearns for despotism. But in fact, these are the very characteristics that define most of the leaders of the Christian right. Trump preyed on desperate people through the thousands of slot machines in his casinos, his sham university, and his real estate deals, just as megachurch pastors prey on their followers by extracting seed offerings, love gifts, tithes, and donations, and by selling miracle healings along with prayer cloths, self-help books, audio and video recordings, and even, if you're Pat Robertson, protein shakes. Pastors have established within their megachurches, as Trump did in his businesses, despotic fiefdoms. They cannot be challenged or questioned any more than an omnipotent Trump can be challenged on the reality television show The Apprentice, which created his fictional persona that vaulted him to the presidency. They seek to replicate their little tyrannies on a national scale. The personal piety of most of the ministers or pastors who lead the Christian right is a facade. Their private lives are usually marked by Trump-like hedonistic squalor that includes mansions, private jets, limousines, retinues of bodyguards, personal assistants and servants, shopping sprees, lavish vacations, and sexual escapades. And because they run churches, church funds pay for their tax-free empires, including their lavish lifestyles. They engage in the same kind of nepotism found in the Trump White House, elevating family members to prominent or highly paid positions and passing on their ministries to their children. The Christian right scandals, which give a glimpse into the sordid lives of these multi-millionaire pastors, are legion. Jim and Tammy Faye Baker's Praise the Lord Club, for example, raked in as much as $1 million a week. before Jim Baker went to prison for nearly 5 years. He was convicted of fraud and other charges because of a $158 million scheme in which followers paid for vacations that never materialized. As the Baker empire came apart, there were also accusations of drug use and rape. Tammy Faye died in 2007, and now Jim Baker is back, peddling survival food for the end days and telling his significantly reduced television audience that anyone who opposes Trump is the Antichrist. Paul and Jan Crouch, who gave the Bakers their start, founded Trinity Broadcasting, the world's largest televangelist network, now run by their son Matt and his wife Lori. I spent hours watching them as part of a live studio audience. Viewers were encouraged to call prayer counselors at the toll-free number shown at the bottom of the screen, and then it was a short step from talking with a prayer counselor to making a love gift and becoming a partner in Trinity Broadcasting and then sending in more money during one of the frequent praise-a-thons. The Crouches reveled in the tasteless quiche, as does Trump. They sat during their very popular nightly program in front of stained-glass windows that overlooked Louis XVI-inspired sets awash in gold rococo and red velvet, glittering chandeliers, and a gold-painted piano. The network emblem, which Paul Crouch wore in the pocket of his blue double-breasted blazer, featured a crown, a lion, a horse, a white dove, a cross, and the Latin phrases along with other elements. The Crouches, of course, would have been at home in Trump Tower, where the president also has a faux Trump crest, allegedly plagiarized, and has decorated his penthouse as if it was Versailles. The Crouches exhorted viewers to send in checks for $1,000, even if they could not afford it. Write the check anyway, Paul Crouch said. He died in 2013. He tells his viewers that it's a step of faith, and the Lord will repay them many times over. Do you think God would have any trouble getting $1,000 extra to you somehow, he asked during one of these praise-a-thons. Viewers, many of whom struggle with deep despair and believe in these miracles and magic, that it's the miracle and magic alone that hold them back from the abyss, often found it impossible to resist this pressure. Trinity Broadcasting Network remains home to several of the worst charlatans in the Christian right, including Benny Hinn, who says that Adam was a superhero who could fly to the moon and claims that one day the dead will be raised by watching Trinity Broadcasting Network, his show, from inside their coffins. Hinn claims his quote-unquote anointings have cured cancer, AIDS, deafness, blindness, and numerous other ailments and physical injuries. Now, those who have not been cured, he says, did not send in enough money. These religious hucksters are some of the most accomplished con artists in the United States, a trait, of course, they share with the current occupant of the Oval Office. I spent several hours at the end of the 2 years of reporting with two of the country's foremost scholars on fascism, Fritz Stern, himself a refugee from Nazi Germany, and Robert Paxton at Columbia University. I wanted to know if the ideology of the Christian right fit the parameters of classical fascism. Was it virulent enough and organized enough to seize power? Would it go to the ruthless extremes of previous fascist movements to persecute and silence dissent? Has our deindustrialized society replicated the crippling despair, alienation, and rage that always feeds fascist movements? This magical belief system, as it was for impoverished German workers who flocked to the Nazi Party, is an emotional life raft. It is all that supports them. And I believe the only way to blunt this movement is to reintegrate these people into the economy, to give them economic stability through good wages and benefits, to restore their self-esteem and the social bonds that knit them to the wider community. They need to live in a society that is not predatory, but instead provides well-funded public schools, free university education, universal health care, a society in which they and their families, and most importantly, their children, can prosper. Let us not stand at the open gates of the city, waiting passively for the barbarians. They are coming. They are slouching towards Bethlehem. Let us shake off our complacency and cynicism. Let us openly defy the liberal establishment, which will not save us, to demand and fight for economic reparations for the poor and the working class. Let us give all Americans a reality-based hope for their future. Time is running out. If we do not act, American fascists, clutching Christian crosses, waving American flags, orchestrating mass recitations of the Pledge of Allegiance, united behind a ludicrous figure such as Donald Trump, will ride this rage to power. Thank you.
I was wondering if you think that there are other countries who are experiencing a rise in the Christian right, and in addition to that, if you think that there are other religions that are being warped in a similar way that Christianity is?
Well, that's a good question, because I went to a Right to Life weekend in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. I like reporting because it always challenges your assumptions, and it was only when I sat through that weekend that I understood what the Right to Life movement was about, which has nothing to do with reproductive rights or abortion. So it was about 400 women. In the front row, there were Catholic priests from a group called Priests for Life. There were Baptists. There were an array of some formal denomination that you wouldn't have seen before. So it does cross religious boundaries. And just for that weekend, because it was chilling and fascinating period, they brought the women in and they asked the post-abortive sisters to stand. So almost all the 400 women stood. And then what they do is they give them a doll and they tell them that that is the child they murdered. And they have to name the doll and bathe the doll and dress the doll and sleep with the doll for these retreat weekends. And then at the end, offer up that, hold that doll and beg for forgiveness and promise to fight the culture of death, which is us. And for me, that was a classic example of how they were preying on and manipulating the shame and despair that these women felt. And so it's cross denominations. It's very, you know, the evangelical movement, I mean, Bolsonaro comes out of it in Brazil. These all have a political agenda, and it's been used quite effectively against, especially in Latin America, the Catholic Church, which, at least under Vatican II, had some kind of social conscience. But yes, it's certainly extended far beyond the border. You know, TBN is huge. I mean, it's worldwide. I lived in the Middle East, and they were broadcasting out of Lebanon.
Who or what organizations are giving you hope at this point in time?
Extinction Rebellion. Do you know what Extinction Rebellion is? Extinction Rebellion is based in London. It's a radical, nonviolent organization centered around the climate emergency. They, on several periods, have shut down London, hundreds of arrests, shut down London Bridge. I was part of the Extinction Rebellion. We shut down the streets in front of the New York Stock Exchange last fall. We've had 40 years of the elites, I mean, who have been well aware of the science around the climate, have done nothing. And we have no time left. I mean, between the wildfires in Australia and California, it's frightening. We don't have any snow in Princeton this year. I mean, it's scary. So I think that nonviolent, sustained acts of civil disobedience is where I find my hope.
With the way that Trump has sort of disregarded unspoken rules of governmental policymaking, I've heard fears that Trump could actually refuse to follow the results of the election should they not go his way. Is this a genuine fear that you could, I guess, that you would fear? What could we do about it?
I think that I found the whole impeachment proceedings quite frightening. Now, I'm not going to let the Democrats off the hook, because there were constitutional violations that were carried out under the Democratic administration. decision to interpret the 2002 Authorization to Use Military Force Act as giving the executive branch the right to assassinate American citizens. I'm talking about the assassination of Anwar al-Awlaki, the radical cleric in Yemen. 2 weeks later, his 16-year-old son, the misuse of signing the statements, wholesale surveillance, which is violating the Fourth Amendment. These are all constitutional violations that the Democrats took part in. And what they actually picked out, I think, to go after Trump were the more trivial violations, not the more systemic and substantial ones. Nevertheless, Trump was, I think, pretty the strong case that he was guilty of obstruction of justice. And the Republican Party, and there must be, I mean, they can't all be stupid. I mean, there must be people in the Republican Party who are well aware that Trump is shredding the rule of law, and they unfortunately were too cowed and worried about their own political careers to do anything about it. So that's a very frightening moment. Because, number one, it normalizes these constitutional violations, including the fact that we are the most spied on, monitored, watched, photographed population in human history, and I covered the Stasi state in East Germany. But so it normalizes all of those, and Trump has now essentially been, he realized he's untouchable. He can do anything he wants. So he's already talked about, you know, serving more than two terms. I don't put much past him. I think it's a legitimate concern.
If the Christian right maintains its hold on power, what do you predict could happen to America as we know it today?
Well, you know, despotism never, very rarely is, I mean, I think historically, it does not arise overnight. You have a kind of creeping despotism, and that's what we have. He's clearly catering to this segment, which is utterly devoted to him, and we know what they want to do, and how far they can go, that's an unknown. But we know where they're going. I mean, they want to make abortion murder. They hate the press, the reality-based press, the press that still speaks out of verifiable fact. This certainly assaults against education. I mean, Betsy DeVos calls charter schools a way to bring about the kingdom. That's a quote. So I think a lot of it depends on us. And unfortunately, we're being steamrolled.
What can we, as college students who are often labeled as, you know, radical and unqualified, what can we do to kind of fight against the far-right Christian groups?
Aristotle laid it out, 2,500 years ago. If you have, he would call it aristocratic, or, I mean, by the way, Aristotle would consider that we live in an oligarchy because we don't have direct democracy. But if you see the rise of aristocratic power and massive income inequality, then, as Aristotle said, you have two choices, and that's revolution or tyranny. And I think that the extreme now, I mean, this is the worst income inequality, I mean, worse than the Gilded Age. You have three men, Bezos, Buffett, and Gates, who control more wealth than the bottom 50% of the country. You know, I don't have the figures at the tip. I don't even know what, 15 million children go to bed hungry. I mean, this is just nuts. And I think the only hope of breaking the back of this movement, because it's impervious to rational discourse. And the reason it's impervious to rational discourse is because they're terrified of being thrust back into that reality-based world that caused them such pain. So I really think that it's a matter of battling back against the oligarchic class that has created the social decay that has given rise to this movement. Thank you.
That was Chris Hedges on Trump and the Christian Right. He spoke at Colgate University in Hamilton, New York in late February 2020. This program is produced by Alternative Radio based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and supported solely by individuals just like you. Every week we feature progressive voices rarely heard in the corporate media. And we have a series of programs featuring Chris Hedges. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs of today's program, Chris Hedges on Trump and the Christian Right, and for our special book offer by legendary historian Howard Zinn, You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, an inspiring book, just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that's 1-800-444-1977. We're making written transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s available to you, our listeners of this program, free of charge. Just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with Willie King and the Liberators. Stand up and speak the truth.
Speak the truth. Stand up.
Stand up.
And speak the truth.
And speak the truth.
We the people have the power to change all corruption. If we would only come together.
Come together.
And speak the truth.
And speak the truth.